KUJZ is 95.3 The Score. And now,
check this out.
It's crunch time with Steve Tannen.
They think he's a righteous dude.
When I win.
Live from the Papa John's studio.
Wait a minute. Let me get CB on the line. We're green lighting it. It's a go.
And I want full air support. I want tanks and some fire throwers. And I want explosions over here. And I want planes going. Cool.
Are they going to bust in here and arrest us?
It's crunch time on 95.3 The Score.
Yo! What we've achieved here is a Monday. First Monday of November 2019. Thanks for tuning in. Quite a weekend. How was yours? Thank you very little. Oregon with a slow start, huge finish, just a mashing of USC to keep themselves in the playoff picture, as we're about 27 hours away from the first revelation tomorrow night. The Pac-12 picture clarifies a little bit. Some doors shut, some doors open. Got the national scene, the National Football League. MLB, they're doling out some contracts. They're kind of positioning themselves for next season. Some big-name free agents. I mean, you know, you got Anthony Rendon from the Champs, along with little Stevie Strasburg, Garrett Cole of Houston. And how about the news from LSU as they prepare for probably their biggest game since the national championship against Bama, the infamous rematch back in 2012, January 2011 season. Michael Divinity has left the team. He is their top sack guy and had some personal issues. He, Justin Thomas, another junior or senior, I forgot, because of personal reasons. Another instance, he missed the opener and their third game, what was classified as a coach's decision. So, he hasn't played that much. And, of course, they've got, like I said, this monster game against Alabama. Oregon takes a bye.
Bearing the lead, Steve.
I live for bye week. This year they gave us two. I feel like I'm already in the playoff, no matter what becomes of the rest of you. So last week they offered up multiple windows of where the return game, Ducks in Arizona at Autzen a week from Saturday, would be 12:30 and blah, 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 5 and blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, please be the 12:30, please be the 12:30, please be the 12:30. Yeah, it's 7:30. Not a lot of people happy about it. There's actually an article with
number 7
The athletic director of Oregon, like, you know, you got a feel for the Duck fans. And, you know, we who live in Eugene, and the last home game, even though it was kind of efficient, I mean, Jerry and Jorgie and those guys, you know, they want to get coached. They want to get a couple players. They got, you know, their sponsored segments. They want to run some numbers and, you know, give their evaluation what happened. And then Kenny and I follow up and got out. I would say we were done by 12:35. But by the time we break down the equipment, we head down to the parking lot. You know, it's a big stadium. It holds 60,000 people. It's not like leaving Matthew Knight Arena where you could have your car out front.
And it's cold, so when you're trying to, when you finally get to the car, you got to defrost it all over
warm
again
because
it's the middle of the night.
A little bit. So I walked into my house at 1:15. And the game ended, make a wish, at 11:11. So in a tight game like that, nobody's leaving. So you live in Bend or Portland. By the time the game ends, they give you that, what, five-minute horn so you don't pour onto the field, although everybody did anyway because of the game-winning kick. But, well, the people who poured onto the field were obviously not worried about catching their car home. So what is it, a minimum? By the time you BS around, get to your car, then traffic, that's at least 3 hours until you get home. And now there's another 7:30 game. And you can't put it on Rob Mullins and the Ducks. I mean, everybody's at the mercy of TV. And for openers, I'll tell you what, why I disagree, and this is a tad antagonistic, but don't you want a good game for later? I mean, there's a chance Oregon wins this game 60-16 or something like that. Arizona has officially, they're the first team, I'm going to say, in the Pac-12 2019 that's got the official defense because they ain't got no D. I mean, they've given up in 4 weeks, 41-41, 51-56. And it's just getting progressively worse. They can't stop anybody. Year two of the Sumlin era, going in the tank. So I guess we've earned our bye week because now we're going to have to do another 7:30. And I just realized, I don't think I even saw who was going to carry the game. Was it, you know, does...
Espen.
Oh, ES. Okay. ESPN, you know, I hate to say it, but a week where Oregon's going to end up sixth or seventh in the college football selection committee rankings to be able to get on ESPN in the Eastern time zone, I guess there's value. 8 o'clock East would have been better than 10:30 East, but like I said, when the conversation came up, people were trying to direct message me and text me. I was like, no, 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 you're not understanding. I don't care about anybody but me here. They were trying to offer up, you know, who has to travel and what the TV logic and what it means to the guys. I was like, no, no, no. First of all, there are two people in this area who do a post-game show after the network post-game show. That's me and Kenny, so I was only thinking of two people. And since it's a home game, Nick will be there too, and plus Bethany on the board.
That's true, yeah. So upwards of four people are heavily impacted by these decisions.
The only four people I was considering, even remotely. 70,000 fans, whatever, you guys will be fine. The players, the coaches, the other TV people, those who have to clean out the stadium. Sorry, normally I'd be like, yeah, normally I got your back. Now I only care about me. Especially we know it ain't getting warmer from this point forward.
That is true. And I was just about to say, well, you know, I don't really mind it because, you know, I just get to hang out and I get to walk around and I walk into all the booths and, you know, I sit around and get to listen to the post-game shows and that's all fun. But when it's that late at night, there's nothing else on TV to watch because even with the games that are, you know, the 5 o'clock kickoffs or whatever, as it's ending, you've got the evening games are still on or there's something weird going on, Pac-12 after dark. You maybe get some weird Midwest action or Mountain West action going on. And there's just none of it next week. There's just none of it because it ends at 1:15 in the morning.
So Arizona, Oregon, same time as UCLA, Utah, which could end up having value. Arizona State, Oregon State, that's actually going to be an important game for both teams as OSU is now 3-2 after their win this week. USC and Cal, man, it's taken a miserable turn for the Bears. And then you got Stanford, Washington State, you know, a couple teams that are more about, and so I'm looking ahead past next week just because, like I said, I'm thinking, so this week doesn't involve us, so I don't care about it. Next week, we make it all about us. So there you go. You want to rename our program Selfish Radio? There you go. There's your reason.
Hashtag all about sports talk, Steve. We've been trying to get this going for a while. A couple of people have been picking up on it. All about sports talk. Everything needs to revolve around us because we're at the center of our worlds.
Yeah. If I'm not going to focus on me, who's going to?
It's true. I'm not. I don't now.
So I saw a quick note, and I'm somewhat concerned. So the Yankees, when they say they don't give a qualifying offer to Didi, are they thinking Torres is going to end up playing short? I mean, he was due to make $18 million, so he's a free agent. They could still try to re-sign him, and you know, he's, for all his wonder and how amazing he's been, taking the baton obviously from an all-timer like Jeets. He's very good power hitter for a shortstop. He's a very good defensive player, but it's strange to think that he's not analytically or sabermetrically sound, because he hacks and he doesn't take a lot of pitches and he doesn't work the count. And so as far as that, yeah. And by the way, I didn't realize about, remember, they got DJ LeMahieu, who's by trade a second baseman. Torres played short in the minors. So, and by the way, mark my words here, and we'll get back to college football. Judge gets a lot of the ink, and he's awesome. To think it's just his second year and what he's accomplished and how he's helped them come back. Remember, he set the home run record last year as a rookie. It seems strange to think he's just been around 2 years. Their best player is Torres. He's going to be their best player. Make no mistake about it. And they got him in the trade at the 2016 deadline with the Cubbies for Chapman. And the reason they were able to, the Cubs were able to obtain Chapman, who helped them win a World Series, was that the Yankees insisted it was either Torres or no deal. Deal or no deal. So, what the heck with that game on Saturday? Woo! And I'll tell you what, considering the previous two games, at Seattle against the Doggies and here against Washington State, and I know Twitter equals knee-jerk, things aren't really well thought out, the 280 characters is not exactly a Harvard thesis with a bibliography and things being well thought out. So, but I mean, there were fans and people, and some saved them, who were basically like, this is terrible. What is wrong? You know, using words like the defense was a fraud. And it's like, it's the first quarter. What the hell is wrong with people? Well, we know. But the penalty situation has just, it turns out that USC is a decent team. They're not a great team. They're not a really good team. They're not a contending team. You pull that crap against Utah, you're going to lose. You can't have that many penalties and just completely, they had 160 yards in penalties. It's, it's like if you grab somebody, it's like, who the hell do you think you are that you could get away with that? And they did, easily. That was the weird part about it. But, no. In a word, no. What'd they have at one point? 83 yards or something like in the first half? Or 100 yards total?
Oregon's offense?
Yeah.
Yeah, they had 113 total yards of offense, and they had 112 yards of penalties.
Yeah, that's a terrible ratio. Just off the top of my head. But it's kind of a tale of two seasons, because it was obvious that they were leaning on the defense and trying to find the offense early in the year. I think there was a bit of confusion as to how the offensive line, which was so nationally renowned, was not playing great. They were having moments. They were a little bit inconsistent. But save the Nevada game, the offense wasn't clicking. And now all of a sudden, like Kenny and I were talking about during the postgame show, they've really come together well. It seems the rotation is set. They're working in sync with, be it Verdell or whoever's been in there running the ball, the great game that Cyrus Abibi-Leikio had. And, Herbert obviously is a mega talent. During the pregame, on Saturday. I mentioned to Kenny if he likes my analysis of, with a guy like Juwan Johnson, who you expected to be such a contributor, then wasn't even on the field, then showed up in the blowout against Colorado. I think he had four catches, no catches against Washington. But now, two clutch catches on the fateful drive against the Cougs and a career game. I said, is it accurate to say he's like, if to use a baseball term, kind of a mid-season pickup at the trade deadline? Because you just added him to the mix, and it's like, well, he's a really good player to add. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Let's take a phone call and bring in Marcus. Marcus, good afternoon. Thanks for calling. How you doing?
Hey, Steve. Thanks for taking my call. Look, man, I feel like complaining about the referees is something, as a Duck fan, I just try not to do. But no better time than after a blowout to raise some concerns, I guess. That had to be one of the most poorly officiated games I've seen in the Pac-12 in a couple of years. And it went both ways. The Ducks didn't get anything or take anything from it more than the Trojans did. But I just wonder, when are we going to do something about the Pac-12 refs? It seems to be there at the bottom of the barrel when you look across nationally. I mean, I know they're lobbying for a playoff spot today. Can they lobby maybe like a union of referees for some better guys out there? What do you think?
Marcus, I appreciate the call. First, there's a couple things. There's a lot to drink in there. First of all, as awful as the Pac-12 refs are, to think you're going to cite just the USC game and not necessarily be wrong, that stands out among Pac-12 ineptitude. And second, Nick and I are looking at each other. It's like, you said, what are we going to do? It's like, I didn't even realize Nick and I had a say. Get me somebody on the line. We're going to take care of this right now.
I mean, I don't know how many more times I'm going to have to call Larry Scott Larry Snot before literally Larry Scott comes down here and like
punches you.
Yeah, rips me away from the microphone. But I don't know what you can do. I've tweeted this out a couple weeks ago. The bar for competent Pac-12 officiating is so low, and week after week they run into it and they kick it and it rolls down the road and it's just lying there on the ground, and then the next week they fall over the bar. It doesn't make any sense. Somebody replied to it. It's like, yeah, they walk up to the bar, and instead of a shovel and they dig their way under, they brought an excavator.
Well, the one call, I think it was the Washington State game, where they came out of the official huddle and they says there's two penalties on Washington State, and it turned out they were both on Oregon. That's difficult to do.
That's day one officiating. Hey, make sure you remember the penalty is on. They're normally wearing two different colors, one kind of
50-50.
Dark. Yeah, and there's two penalties. It would have been one thing, oh, there we have offsetting penalties, because I remember somebody said Oregon and somebody said Washington, but then I got confused. No, you got both of them wrong.
They don't even sound alike, by the way.
No, they don't. The colors were very different as well.
So a few plays stand out, and the level of inconsistency, and my new favorite is a penalty is called, and then they don't tell you. It's like, so if I'm the head official, you got to grab the guy and said, did you throw the flag? Yes. Why? Don't try and weasel your way out of it. Don't start hemming and hawing like you got pulled over by a cop. You reached into your uniform. You pulled out the yellow flag. You threw it on the ground. I need the player. I need the team. I need the number. I need the infraction. Or you have to leave. But I thought Marcus made an excellent point in that while down the stretch against Washington State, the phantom false start against Penei Sewell, the completely fabricated pass interference call against the Amador Lenore when it was clear that it wasn't clear. It looked like A, it was obviously not PI, and B, it looked like the Coug receiver would have gone out of bounds with his foot, stepped back in, thus illegal touching with fingertips to shoulders. That's like my favorite call, so let's not even start. 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Let's bring in Josh. Josh, good afternoon. How's it going?
Hey, Steve. The referees are just the tip of the iceberg as to why you should be annoyed with Larry Scott in the Pac-12. why in the world are they scheduling the Ducks to play at 7:30 p.m. against Arizona when they're a team that has a chance in the college football playoffs? Wouldn't you want them in prime time? That doesn't make any sense.
Well, that's not the conference's call. That's TV's call. And, you know, the conference has a partnership. But, yeah, there's a lot of complaints within the Pac-12 about that decision right now.
Well, TV's not going to put Alabama at a 7:30 time slot for sure. I mean, if I'm the Oregon team, I'm throwing a fit about that, you know, or appealing to the conference to try to make something change because it doesn't make any sense.
Well, but, and remember one thing, Alabama's not going to be, and they also play in the East, so there's
well, yeah,
and the SEC is. I don't think you'll ever see an SEC team start after 5 local time anyway. I think that's just their contract.
Yeah, but I mean, if things were reversed and they were on the West Coast, I would say. I just feel like if your two teams, Utah and Oregon, are your best chance to make the playoffs, you'd want them where the most viewers on the East Coast, most voters on the East Coast could watch them play and have a decision. But I don't know. I don't run things.
No, not yet. Anyway, thanks, Josh. I would imagine that with the upgraded presence in the last 4 or 5 years, ESPN LA, you know, with Neil Everett doing a show out there, that they decided, okay, we've got the Bay Area, we've got Phoenix, we've got Seattle. Those are major markets. We're going to get the whole prime time there for that window for a Pac-12 game. I don't think that's rocket science. I think they realize that on the East Coast, the interest will be limited based on the schedules that day, Penn State, Ohio State, and other stuff like that. I'm not saying I agree. I'm just saying that would be the only logic that would make sense, but the logic isn't always sensible. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Let's bring in Steven. Steven, good afternoon. How's it going?
Hey, Stephen Baroni, Team USA Fan Council to Olympic athletes. I want to tell everybody in Lane County that I am no longer in Special Olympics for after being in a program for 11 years. And because the reason is because my family and I are moving to Florida, where Donald Trump is going to be moving in 2020. And I want to say thank you to everybody, law enforcement officers, for contributing to Special Olympics and to people with disabilities. Thank you, Special Olympics, and everybody for loving people with disabilities. And thank you for choosing kindness.
All right. Thanks, Steven. Is he working for Trump now?
I think they're just two different things.
That was interesting to kind of tie that whole thing in. Where in Florida? Mar-a-Lago? Safeway? Panhandle? Tampa? West Park? We need it. We need deets, Stevie. All right, 284.
Tallahassee, maybe?
Is he secretly in line to be the next Florida State coach? All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. It's the Monday edition of the show. Let's take a break, come back. We'll have an update and more talk. A lot of Pac-12 to get to, a lot to unpack from Ducks USC. That was a packed game with a lot of action, a lot of penalties, a lot of selfish play, some ejections. What a wild Saturday. We'll be back and talk about it more. 95.3 The Score.
The Score is your home for live sports talk all day, every day. Download the TuneIn app and take 95.3 The Score with you wherever you go.
Monkel right inside the 5, and it's going to go back and be at the 1 yard line. He'll return it to the 10, 15, 20. Here he goes, 30. Got some speed, 50. Got a lot of speed, 30. He's going to go to the 20. Not going to catch him. How about a 100-yard touchdown run for the freshman, Monkel Wright?
Do I get a vote on that? Yes. How about it, Jerry? I'm saying yes. Let's have more of that. So, Mikael Wright is a freshman backup defensive back, and all of a sudden, you're noticing in the rotation, oh, there's a two, there's a two, there's a two, and then Washington State goes down and scores, and suddenly Oregon is a minute away from a gut-wrenching loss. People were going to be pissed off to be every band in the spectrum because of some of the officiating down the stretch. And the Cougs kick the ball, and it's like, well, who's that guy? He's out near the 40-yard line. This might happen. I mean, you know, you only needed a field goal. And 15 yards with a minute to go, that's a lot. You know, all of a sudden now one first down, which they got to Juwan Johnson, and you're in enemy territory. So he does that, and then with momentum kind of hanging in the balance. By the way, what the hell is USC doing with 20 seconds to go, kicking it deep? I'm not saying you onsides it, but there's a squib. It's like, let it hit on the 30. Because at that point, Oregon's not going to take a shot. They're getting the ball to start the second half. So, reason apparently number 411 why Clay Helton is going to not be the USC coach by the time Christmas rolls around. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Welcome back to Crunch Time. The Monday edition, November is here. Folks, when you follow college football, November, one word, magnitude. All right, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline is open. Let's get to it and bring in Jim. Jim, good afternoon. How's it going?
Hello, Steve.
Hey, how you doing?
Is this the kvetch department? Am I the only one that thinks that the NFL overtime rules, especially regarding the coin flip, and the touch first, if you score a touchdown, everybody knows what that is. And that's it. You win the game. It's kind of unfair.
Oh, I'm all about sudden death. When they said everybody needs to get a possession and they changed sudden death to overtime, I was like, that to me was bitch and kvetch and complain. It's like you just played 60 minutes. You each had 75 snaps. It's a tie. Next team that scores, you win. Everybody go the hell home.
Yeah, but it's
nope.
It depends on the coin flip.
Well,
and get a touchdown.
Yeah, but you just know. Had 4 quarters, 60 minutes, and 150 snaps to win the game. So you lost the toss. How about this? Stop them.
Well, yeah, but still, I think, you know, and how about 9 innings in a baseball game? The visiting team scores, breaks the tie in the top of the ninth. Game over. You just had
because the home team has not had their 9 at-bats. Everybody got 4 quarters in baseball. Everybody got their 9 at-bats.
Now, if you get a touchdown, the other guy gets a touchdown, or he loses, or that's it. Goodbye. You lost.
So
meanwhile, that's my opinion. We can disagree.
Well,
that end of the kvetch department.
All right.
But I think you brought this up regarding, because I came in at the tail end of the conversation. Somebody on the East Coast is not going to recognize the West Coast. And then you mentioned a couple other teams, East Coast rep teams, I think. I think that if you get the Ducks with one loss at the end of the season and teams like LSU, Alabama, Clemson, Georgia, Penn State, all of them with one loss, guess who automatically is outruled as far as the CFP committee is concerned? The Ducks.
No. Depends on circumstance. If Oregon wins out and Utah wins out, and there's a one-loss SEC team or a Big Ten team or ACC, it can't be an ACC team, and they have not won their conference championship, nope, Oregon's going.
I hope so.
And by the way, Oregon also, Oregon's a benefit of the doubt. I appreciate the call. I mean, did you hear Tiki and Tierney today? Everybody loves Oregon. Oregon is a national pet. They like the swag. They like the look. They like the freshness they bring. They like the uniqueness. So, again, and by the way, again, under those circumstances, like I've said, why I love the four-team college football playoff, because in the end, no matter how pissed you'd be at the selection committee, well, if Oregon had beaten Auburn, they would have taken the decision out of the selection committee's hands, because there's never going to be an unbeaten, God bless you, Power 5 team who wins all their games, wins their conference title game, and fails to get into the college football playoff. It only happened once when they only took two. Remember BCS 1998 through 2013? There was only one instance of three unbeaten teams. Now you would need five, which is never, it's already impossible to happen, and it's the first Monday in November. So you can play your hypothetical games, and for the folks who are always playing, the Pac-12 gets no respect. You know, I know something, if somebody grew up on the East Coast, and for somebody who lives on the West Coast, when there's something really interesting happening on the other coast and you live on the opposite coast, you watch it. We didn't miss out on the Lakers or the UCLA dynasty or the great USC or Washington teams living in Jersey. And those of you who live out here, you watch the Nationals and the Yankees if you like baseball, and you watch Alabama if you like college football. You make time for it if it's unique, if it's great, if it's special, and it's worth your time. It's really not rocket science. 284-8571. The Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. And last week I came up with that concoction, which I called The Path. And Utah's win at Washington was enormous. It's actually set up. The Utes and the Ducks are going to be, I would say, at least double-digit favorites in their remaining games. So if you figure, all right, now I have to look at the rankings. You guys, you know how I feel about the rankings, and you're making me look at the rankings. So LSU and Bama play Saturday. One of them are out. Ohio State and Penn State are playing after Minnesota plays Penn State. There ain't going to be but one standing there. So all you need, if you're an Oregon fan, is somebody to beat Baylor, and they've got some tough games. They've still got to play Oklahoma. They've still got to play Texas. So unless the Bama-LSU winner wins out, okay, that's an unbeaten from the SEC. In whoever survives the three-way between the Buckeyes, the Nittanies, and the Gophers, the other two absolutely will have a loss. One, Clemson ain't getting beat, so just put Clemson in. So then you would have a one-loss champ from the Big 12, a one-loss champ from the Pac-12, and with Oklahoma having lost to Kansas State, and if Utah and Oregon win out, you'll have like a 5-6 for the conference title, which nobody else is likely to have. Because remember, Ohio State and Penn State play in the same division, as do Alabama and LSU. So the path is clearly defined. It's just not that easy that it comes to be. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Let's bring in Larry. Larry, good afternoon. How's it going?
Good afternoon to you, Steve.
What's up?
I was watching the NFL Red Zone yesterday.
Okay.
And the Jets were playing Miami. I don't know if you saw this play, but it drove me crazy. I don't understand. Maybe you can help me out. The tight end for the Jets catches the ball in the end zone, has 2 feet down, and then kind of the momentum takes him out of bounds. He falls down, and the ball's juggled, and they didn't call it a touchdown.
You actually spent time watching the Jets and Dolphins yesterday?
NFL Red Zone. And it was a play that it was like, okay. Then there was this controversy, and they reversed it. They did not give him the touchdown.
And who?
It's just insane to me.
And who did not get the touchdown?
The Jets tied in.
Oh,
and
good.
The next play, Darnold threw an interception on the goal line. But this was a situation where he has both feet in. All announcers say so. I mean, it's obvious. He catches the ball, and on his way out, I guess he didn't make a football move
right
out of bounds.
Yeah, that's,
I don't know.
That's the Calvin Johnson rule.
It's crazy.
Yeah, you would think, and I appreciate the call, of all the complicated rules that do exist in all the sports we follow, I throw, you catch. Shouldn't we kind of have that? Inbounds? Do you have the ball? I'm really not that big on going to... Well, first of all, you like to hear the NFL talk about a ground can't cause a fumble. But there's a ground there. And he had the ball, and then he hit the ground, and he lost the ball. It just caused the fumble.
But isn't he down? Isn't like that how tackling works? Is like you're down?
I'm agreeing. I'm just saying the left hand contradicts the right hand with every breath they take.
No, the Ryan Griffin catch, no catch was kind of a joke because he made probably the most athletic move that a guy of his size will ever make in his life, like doing the Michael Jackson, Billie Jean lean in the corner of the end zone, like scraping shoelaces in right. to count his toes or whatever. And as he's hitting the ground, like the ball like moves a little bit almost by virtue of like physics of a big body hitting the ground.
Part of the earth.
Right, exactly. Like, literally just, like, living how just things react. It's like, the ball moved when you hit the ground, and he kind of juggled it. So, not a catch. I'm sorry. He didn't maintain possession through physics. It's incomplete.
By the way, I blew it so bad Friday. We were doing our Frostbrewed Friday, and I had a lot going on. I had typed out a little paragraph of, make sure you guarantee the Jets are going to lose this game. I bust everybody's balls when you try to grandfather it in. But if my word has ever meant, I wanted to refer to the time we were at the Jets and Aints week 15 when New Orleans was 0-15. It's like if they are truly the Jets, like I know they're the Jets and few other people know how Jets the Jets are when they're being the Jets during a Jets season. There was literally no chance. This is what I'm saying. They could play same teams, same circumstances, 1 million times. The Jets are never winning that game once. Zero for a million. Not 1,000, not 100,000, not 500,000. That is the most Jets thing ever. It was glorious. I kept checking in on it just because, especially when it looked like they were going to lose, just to see the expression on Gase. And it was so funny. Because is there no chance a football team is going to win a given game? Not really. Except that game. There was no chance they were going to win that game. And I blew it. We could have been playing the tape right now. I was so pissed yesterday when I realized that. You have no idea. Because I went back and checked my notes. Because I always put a little check. Yeah, you talked about this. And then I have a certain way of notifying myself. Well, because you talked about it in the 3 o'clock hour, you still might bring it up later. It's a good information. I was like, it was a clean piece of paper. I was like, it's the one thing nobody out here is within 70 miles of being an expert on, except for you, the misery, the disgust, the failure that is the New York Football Jets.
So you're 2 for 2 on your last predictions of not following through.
Yeah, and one cost me $1,800 and one just cost me some humor. By the way, that had to be a month ago, right? At least it was weeks before the playoffs. I said I was looking at my betting site and my daughter was going to Vegas. I was like, I should just throw a hundy down on the Nats. I got a good feeling about them. And $100 at 18-1. Do the math. God. By the way, leave it to the Jets to aggravate me and a bet to just leave me. All right, are you counting up to 18 now? Well, let me know when you get past 17. All right, one call before break. Let's get to the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline and bring in Brian. Brian, how's it going?
Hey, good, Justin. How are you?
Justin?
Oh, sorry. That was the old sports idol.
Yeah, you're only about 6 years off, but go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry about that. Hey, I just called a gripe a little bit with the Ducks when they were playing USC. Did you ever get the backstory on the defensive lineman? Is it Austin Faiolu?
Yeah, Austin Faiolu.
He freaked out on it. I didn't even see. It looked like it was just a regular play. They tackled the guy, and then he just lost it.
He did lose it at a most inopportune moment. He's a starting defensive tackle in the most important game of his life, and he absolutely deserved to get thrown out.
That was so frustrating. I get it. Tensions are high. your emotions are there, but man, the Ducks looked embarrassing in some moments. Like that one was just ridiculous.
No, it was, I appreciate the call, Brian. It was illogical. I mean, at least the one on Pickett happened during a play. And the same thing when the USC dude completely used the crown of his helmet as a weapon, which is a total no-no. All right, we got to take a break. We'll come back and we'll wrap up crunch time with, what are we doing? Richter scale next, 95.3 The Score.
Today's show is brought to you by the Coors Light Frost Brewed Sports Desk. Coors Light is the official sponsor of your Oregon Ducks and the Coors Light Refreshing Tweet of the Day. Tweet Steve at SportsTalk953 for your chance to get involved. Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
Jaren Williams to pass, first down. Downfield has Wiggins, caught at the 20, to the 10, the 5, touchdown! Jaren Williams, 56 yards to D. Wiggins for his first touchdown catch of the season. Miami with a 2-touchdown lead.
Mark Kestisher, excuse me, ESPN Radio, as the Canes, turns out, seal Willie Taggart's fate at Florida State. Something we failed to mention in the first hour, but we shall chat about moving forward. But right
be
now,
still, Taggart, be still.
So let's make a move here. We're running a tad tardy. It's the final segment of Crunch Time on a Monday on 95.3 The Score, which means we do this.
Well, it's big and terrible. More frightening than I ever thought possible.
Sounds kind of good, doesn't it?
Other people want it. It must be good.
So it's bad.
How bad?
Oh my God, that's the worst thing I ever heard in my life.
Hi, everybody.
Yellow, Dr. Nick.
Welcome to the Richter Scale, recapping the weekend that was. Bring up the biggest news, events, stories, everything. And Steve rates how big of an impact it had. At first, things were not good. The USC band started an overrated chant. The Ducks were down 10-0. And that damn Pac-12-iness was looking like it was going to strike the Ducks. And yet another top 10 team was going to lose to an unranked team. And then magically, Jeff Schwartz changed his seat on his couch. And the Ducks went on a 21-point run, scoring on offense, defense, and special teams. Yes, USC isn't the same that they've been in the past. And they had a true freshman playing for him. And Slovis, by the way, looked very good. And is probably going to be really good once he gets some more playing time under his belt. But this was an Oregon team that was coming off of two close wins and just had a rough team with an air raid offense, and USC had far better weapons to throw to, and the Ducks put up 56 on USC on the road in prime time. They put on such a beatdown that Gus Johnson, the man who makes paint drying exciting, he got bored. How good are beatdowns against USC?
It's historic. I think for a younger generation, it's now kind of coming ho-hum because that's like the fourth in the last 10 years. For folks from my age, it's like, never would have seen this coming. Are we going scale 1 to 10?
Yes.
Oh, it's a 10. Forget about it. It's so still
fun.
USC.
It's so fun. Tomorrow, the first college football playoff rankings will come out, making the AP poll that came out yesterday kind of obsolete. The Ducks held at 7th, and as the only teams above them that played on Saturday were Clemson, who crushed Wofford, and Georgia, who blew by Florida. This week, we'll get the likely number 1 versus number 2 matchup between LSU-Bama. Undefeated Penn State takes on Minnesota, and Ohio State is already up 37 on Maryland.
They are.
The Ducks win over USC, who again aren't anything of the USC of old, other than the color and the uniform, is being touted as a statement win for Oregon. Coach Cristobal said that the Ducks should be in the playoff picture conversation, and they certainly are. The only wrinkle here being, what exactly does the committee make of Oregon now in the six teams ahead of them? So how high will Oregon be ranked in the first college football playoff rankings?
6.
Wow. So it's not, so they're moving up one in the AP poll?
Well, I just think based on the poll, I think they'll end up. Oh no! Wait! 1, 2, 3, 4. Yeah, 6. They're going to be 6.
All right. NFL Sunday was dominated by a couple of big storylines. One, how bad are the Jets? And two, Freddie Kitchens lost control of the Browns?
Yes.
Gase was picked to come in and groom Sam Darnold in the same way that he worked with Peyton Manning. Take their shiny Le'Veon Bell, add a little bit of a running game, and maybe start the foundation to one day be slightly better than the Bills in the division or something. I don't know. The Jets tried to win this year and just got almost beaten down by a team that traded away every positive asset it had remaining because it was going to be bad. And the Browns also had high expectations with the way 2018 ended, and that's gone. Bye-bye. The NFL had to tell Odell Beckham and Jarvis Landry to change their shoes or be disqualified from playing. OBJ is mad that Baker isn't throwing him the ball. The play calling wasn't great, and Freddie Kitchens was handedly outcoached by Vic Fangio. Yikes. How hot are the seats of Freddie Kitchens and Adam Gase?
Kitchens might survive the off season. Gase is done. He's one and done.
Wow.
There's no, because they're going to wind up 1-15 or 2-14. And if Darnold continues to regress, they're going to be like, well, what the hell did we bring this moron in for? We could have done that ourselves.
All right. Last one here. 20. That's the number of millions of dollars that Florida State boosters scrounged together from their couch cushions to pay off now former Florida State head coach Willie Taggart. Just a season and a half was all it took for FSU to realize that they, A, hired the wrong guy, or B, vastly underestimated how bad things were before Jimbo Fisher took off for Texas A&M. That said, this buyout of Taggart is now the second biggest in the history of college football, with him getting close to $17 million, which is just slightly less than what Charlie Weiss got when he left Notre Dame. Duck fans were mad at how he left Oregon after his one season here, but now are so happy at what he's left behind. There was Jim Leavitt, which everybody liked for a little bit. There were the recruiting classes, Coach Cristobal, and even Coconut Up, all because Willie went and did something and then he got bounced out of town. How high should Duck fans Schadenfreude be with Willie Taggart getting fired?
Oh, well, first of all, if you asked me this before I posted that tweet over the weekend, I would have said a 9. But now seeing the actual documented reaction, it's a Spinal Tap. It's an 11. You've never seen people so happy. I don't know if they're happier that he's fired and FSU is miserable, or that they're going to win the North and maybe go to the Rose Bowl or the playoff. I don't know which they're happier. It's a push. All right, looking ahead to the 4 o'clock hour. I guess we'll talk about that a little bit, as long as we could have people maintain some element of decorum. In the 5 o'clock hour, our first chat this season with Oregon basketball coach, Oregon women's basketball coach, Kelly Graves. By the way, when I was talking about the football rankings, somebody texted in and wanted to know, are we talking about the men or the women's rankings? This is never going to get lived down, nor should it. We'll be back with Sports Talk next, 95.3 The Score.
I'm not going to be here.